to his 29th year of teaching here in the Treasure Valley. How many of you ever heard of the Treasure Valley? And he started his career just down the road here at Centennial Elementary School. And so you can see that, and both of my daughters are certified yoga instructors, and they have their classes, and they have their students. And so it's just DNA. My DNA is just so filled with teacher stuff. And I love to collect stories and anecdotes. I read one recently about a junior high student in a biology class. And the biology teacher was teaching about whales, the largest mammals on the planet. And he was making the point that it's so ironic because you would think a whale could eat a horse or a house. They're so huge. But he said they feed on plankton and shrimp and small fish because their swallowing apparatus is so small and so little and so constricted. And then he kind of went off the rails and said, and that absolutely disproves that ridiculous story in the Bible about Jonah and the whale. It's biologically impossible. It could never happen. And a Christian student sitting near the front said, sir, I respectfully disagree because I do believe what the Bible teaches. And but I guess I'm just going to have to wait till I get to heaven and I can ask Jonah myself. And the teacher said, well, what if Jonah didn't go to heaven? What if he went to hell? The student said, well, then you can ask him. Yes. See, and I can tell that little story in church because it mentions heaven and hell and Jonah and whales, and so it's all very appropriate. Last Sunday, we talked about what Jesus wants us to do for him. He wants us to love God with all our heart and our neighbor as ourselves and live at peace, be at peace with everyone as much as it's possible. Today, we're going to talk about what Jesus wants to do for us and what he has done for us. And I've only got about 5 minutes left before choir practice, so turn to John chapter 1, if you would. The Word of God speaks the truth of God to the people of God by the Spirit of God. And John, I believe, as he writes his gospel, is thinking back across the years of his time with Jesus. There probably was nobody closer to John than Jesus, and nobody closer to Jesus than John. He was called the beloved disciple, who was the only disciple at the foot of the cross. It was John. And Jesus said to his mother, treat him like your son. And Jesus said to John, take care of my mom. I mean, there was something special, the relationship with John and Jesus. And John is thinking back across these years with Jesus, and he's just trying to find the right way to introduce his audience to who Jesus was and why he came and what he was all about. And so he starts by saying, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He says right up front, you know, he calls him the Word, capital W. He's not talking about a word. He's talking about a person. He's talking about Jesus. He says he was with God in the beginning, and through him all things were made. Jesus was part of the whole creative process. Without him, nothing was made that has been made, even whales. And in him was life, and that life was the light of man. The light shines in the darkness, but the darkness has not understood it. Skip down to verse 9. The light, the true light that gives light to every man, was coming into the world. So John is painting this picture of the second person of the Trinity is coming our way, and he's bringing light, and he's bringing life, and he's coming to where we live. He was in the world, and though the world was made through him, the world didn't recognize him. And he came to that which was his own, but his own did not receive him. He's talking about the Jewish nation, the children of Israel. He came to that which was his own, but they didn't receive him. Yet to all who received him, to those who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of God. That's you, and that's me. We've been grafted into the vine. Children born not of natural descent, nor of human decision, or a husband's will, but born of God. Now look at this verse. He's wrapping it up. Verse 14. The Word became flesh. Jesus became one of us, made his dwelling among us. We've seen his glory, the glory of the one and only who came from the Father, full of grace and full of truth. Now turn over to Hebrews, if you would, please. Just a couple of paragraphs in Hebrews. The author to Hebrews is picking up this theme about Jesus coming to earth. Jesus taking on flesh. Verse 14, since the children, that's you and I, have flesh and blood, he too, Jesus, shared in our humanity so that by his death he might destroy him who holds the power of death, that is the devil, and free all of those who through their lives were held in slavery by their fear of death. For surely it's not angels he helps, but it's Abraham's descendants. For this reason, Jesus had to be made like his brothers in every way in order that he might become a merciful and faithful high priest in service to God, and that he might make atonement for the sins of the people. Now listen to this. Because he, Jesus, himself suffered when he was tempted, he's able to help those who are being tempted. How many of you have ever been tempted in your life? Most of you, by your hands, because he himself suffered, he's able to help us in our temptation. One more paragraph. Chapter 4 of Hebrews, verse 14. Therefore, since we have a great high priest who has gone through the heavens, Jesus, the Son of God, let us hold firmly to the faith that we profess, for we do not have a high priest who is unable to sympathize with our weaknesses. But we have one who's been tempted, and some translations translate it tested, been tempted and tested in every way, just as we are, yet he was without sin. So let us then approach the throne of grace with confidence so that we can receive mercy and find grace to help us in our time of need. My word, that is the best news this whole sin-sick world has ever heard. Okay, it's February 15th, 1921, a little over 100 years ago. The place is New York City. We're going to the operating room of a large hospital there where a doctor is about to perform an appendectomy. The patient's complained of severe abdominal pain. The diagnosis is clear, unmistakable. It's an inflamed appendix. And the surgeon that morning is 60-year-old Dr. Evan O'Neill Kane. Been practicing for 37 years. By now, he should be getting it right. But in those 37 years of medical practice, he's performed over 4,000 appendectomies. I mean, that's the kind of doctor I would want if I was going in for an appendectomy. Somebody who had done thousands of them. Now, this should be an uneventful routine surgery, but it's unique and different in two different ways. First of all, it's going to be the first time local anesthetic has ever been used in a major surgery. Dr. Kane has been a crusader against the dangers of general anesthesia, you know, where they put you all the way under. He's long thought that it would be much safer for patients to have just a local anesthetic, just deaden the area that needs to be addressed. Most other doctors agree with him, but it's never been done before. Nobody knows what to expect. In order for folks to really buy in and believe, they're going to have to see this theory applied in practice. So the search has been on for a willing volunteer. Not me. Can you imagine being awake while the doc cuts you open and removes body parts and organs? Now, in theory, this should work right. You know, you deaden that area and you can get it out. Shouldn't be any problem. But what if the local anesthetic wears off too soon? So there's more questions than answers. All legitimate fears. This has never been done before. Nobody knows what to expect. But finally, Dr. Kane finds a volunteer. And on Thursday morning, February 15th, 1921, the patient's prepped, wheeled into the operating room, and the historic surgery is about to begin. Local anesthetic is applied for the very first time in medical history. And as he has done thousands of times, Dr. Kane dissects the outer tissues and locates the inflamed appendix and makes all the appropriate incisions and skillfully removes the appendix, sews up the patient, concludes the operation. The volunteer is wheeled into a recovery room and rests for a couple of days, dismissed 2 days later, and the surgery has been a resounding success. The patient had complained of only minor discomfort, and Dr. Kane has proven his theory that local anesthetic is a viable, safer alternative. I told you there were two facts that made this surgery unique. One, obviously, was the first use of local anesthetic. The other was the patient. The courageous guinea pig who volunteered for this history-making surgery by Dr. Kane was Dr. Kane. He cut himself open after first applying a local anesthetic. He removed his own appendix. He sewed himself up, proclaimed victory, and rolled off into the sunset. The doctor became a patient in order to convince patients they could really trust their doctor. I just about lost it when I first read this story. My appendix began to hurt. I thought, that's crazy. But you know what? It kind of reminded me of something happened a couple thousand years before that. The Word became flesh and dwelt among us. The doctor became a patient. The Word became flesh. Jesus Christ left the glories and wonders and beauties of heaven. Came down here, became one of us, so that we would know beyond a shadow of a doubt that the divine healer really understands us and really knows what we're going through and really can help us in whatever situation we're facing. He took our place. He put on skin. He came into our world. He became one with humanity so that he could experience, the Bible says, every temptation, every test, every situation and circumstance you'll ever be faced with. And he'll know exactly what you're going through. He'll know exactly how you feel. He's experienced it all. I love the fact that when God sent, well, he didn't send an angel. He didn't send a messenger. He didn't send an ambassador or an emissary to say, hey, we're watching what's going on down here. We really care about you guys. No, he sent his own flesh and blood. He sent his only begotten son, Jesus, to live in your shoes, to walk in my shoes, to experience what it means to live in a broken world and deal with broken hearts and situations that are beyond our control. See, we don't have a high priest who is unable to sympathize with our weaknesses. But we've got one who has been tested and tempted in every way, in every way. There's never been anything you've faced that Jesus doesn't personally know what it's like. 100%. Every hurt, every heartache, every broken place, every disappointment, every discouragement, every broken relationship, every anxiety, every fear. I could go down the list of every human emotion and experience. And Jesus knows. The doctor became a patient in order to help us understand that we can trust the doctor. The Word became flesh. You see it often during election season, right before there's going to be a big vote. The politician puts on a hard hat and goes down to the factory and shakes hands and drinks coffee and rubs shoulders with the factory workers. Or maybe the social worker or a social activist goes into the inner city and spends the night on the streets with the homeless people and sleeps in a box. Or when I was in basic training in Fort Lewis, Washington, the company commander would come into the mess hall about once a week and sit down with the soldiers and eat the stuff we were eating and complained about it as much as we did. Now, all these folks wanted to communicate the same message. The politician, the social worker, the company commander, they all were trying to say to us, listen, I understand. I can identify. I know what you're going through. I know how you feel. I realize how awful this food is. But there's just one problem with all of that. See, the factory workers knew that that politician's hat was going to come off as soon as the cameras were gone. And that politician would be back in his plush office, his warm plush office. The homeless folks on the street may be homeless, but they're not stupid. And they knew that social worker would be back in his or her warm bed or writing a white paper on the hardships of the street people. And we all knew that the company commander would eat a lot more meals at home or in the officer's mess than he would ever eat with us. And see, as hard as they tried, and I believe their motives were good, these well-meaning professionals didn't really come all the way down. Their participation was superficial. It was temporary. It was partial. But Jesus, he came all the way down. Bone of our bone, flesh of our flesh. He got dirty. He got hurt. He bled. He wept. He felt tension and stress and anxiety to the point where he sweat drops of blood. There's nothing you've gone through that Jesus can't understand and be a part of and move alongside you. When we lived in Kirkland, Washington, Josh, our oldest, when he was about 8 or 9, he got interested in basketball. He started watching Michael Jordan, and he wanted to be like Mike. And so we set up a hoop in the backyard, and on weekends sometimes in the evening, Josh would go out and shoot hoops, and I'd go out and shoot with him. And he was just a skinny. His nickname was Bones. Everybody called him Bones. He's still really skinny, but he actually had to put on snowshoes when he took a shower so he didn't go right down the drain. He's skinny. You hear what I'm trying to tell you? So he's up there, you know, he's got this big old basketball that's bigger than he is, and he's shooting up there and pushing up there and trying to get the ball up to the hoop and falling short and getting frustrated. And I could see that he was just not having a good time with this as much as he wanted to do it right. And I'd go out and I'd kind of coach him up and try to help him and show him how to hold the ball and, you know, use his legs and blah, blah, blah. And he'd shoot and miss, short and short. And he just got really frustrated one time. He said, "Dad, it's easy for you up there. You don't know what it's like down here." You can't say that about Jesus. He knows what it's like down here. And there's a reason that he came. Now, I have to apologize to you this morning. Because you're getting shortchanged. You are not getting your money's worth. Every good sermon should have 3 points. And the really good ones, the points all start with the same letter. You know how pastors are addicted to that alliteration thing. You're getting 1 point. 1 point to take home with you. And we can come at it all sorts of different ways and try to describe it all sorts of different ways, but Jesus knows how you feel. Jesus knows what you're going through. And it's different for every one of you, isn't it? I don't know if there's 300 people here today, but there's 300 situations going on inside people. You know that thing that keeps you awake at night? That thing that just kind of shows up as a tightness in the chest or just a knot in your gut. That weight, you know, it might be financial. It might be physical. It might be relational. It might have something to do with work. It might have something to do with home. It might have something to do with prodigal sons and daughters or grandkids. I don't know, but I know somebody who does. And my job this morning, simply, I know, is simply to remind you. I haven't told you anything you don't already know. You already know every bit of this stuff. You've heard it preached dozens of times. But I'm supposed to remind you that whatever you're going through right now, Jesus wants to move alongside you and say, "My grace is still sufficient. I'm still walking this road with you. You are not alone. I know how it feels," Jesus says. And so when Jesus says in Matthew 11:28, "Come to me, all you who are weary, heavy laden, burdened, and I'll give you rest." See, he knows exactly the kind of rest you need. He knows exactly what needs to happen in your spirit to begin to minister to you at the deepest point of your need. And when Jesus, Peter writes it, he says, "Cast all your burdens and anxieties on Jesus because he cares for you." All of them. All of them. And when John writes and quotes Jesus, when Jesus said, "Peace I leave with you, my peace I give to you." It's not going to be like the world gives. You know the difference between worry and prayer is simply who you're talking to. When you're worried, there's a lot of self-talk, a lot of negative self-talk. And when you're worried, you're telling everybody else. And maybe that helps a little bit. When you're praying, you're talking to Jesus. The only one who can really make a difference, help you through it, keep you steady, keep you moving, keep you trusting even in the hardest times. I'm gonna ask the worship team to come back. We're gonna close with a song. And I just want to remind you of a couple of things as they're coming up. Hebrews 4:15-16. We don't have a high priest who's unable to empathize or sympathize. We've got one who knows. And so then there's the invitation, that last part of it. Let us approach God's throne of grace with confidence so that you can receive mercy and you can find grace in your time of need, in the place where you are. If I had given you a 3x5 card and a pen this morning when you walked in and asked you to finish this sentence, Lord, here is where I'm struggling. Lord, here's where I'm afraid. Lord, here's where I'm really, really hurting. And then you fill in the blank. And for the next couple of minutes while we sing, I want you to fill in the blank. I want you to name it. I want you to identify it. And I want you to bring it to Jesus. I want you to lay it down and pray it up and cast that burden on Him and say, Lord, right now, I need You to minister to me right here. And you know, there can be some amazing things that happen in the next 2 or 3 minutes. There can be some burdens lifted this morning. There can be some steps of faith and trust taken in the next few minutes. And I guarantee you, there can be some grace and forgiveness and blessing fallen from heaven and landing on hearts and souls that are burdened and weary right here. I believe that with all my heart. Jesus told me to remind you this morning that He wants to help you carry your load. And He cares about you and He loves you. The power of His love. The power of His love. So these next 2 or 3 minutes are yours. You know, you can do anything you want with them. But I'm trusting that you and Jesus are going to have a few moments together.